everybody. Welcome to the ANN After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Dun, 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 dun.
I read your review for the first three episodes. How is the creepy nuts earworm that you've got going on?
Oh, it's still there. It's never going to leave me. It'll be there till I die.
Yeah. So,
that's okay. I've come to terms with it. You know, just hear it in my head, even right now. Even right now, there's nothing I can do to get it out.
I'm noticing in our comments, we've got a couple of people from X/Twitter who maybe are new and are confused. Hey, Shibata Heya, I'm sorry that you got a notification that said MILFs are out, GILFs are in, but we're here to deliver the news that is in fact true.
I was gonna say, if we've learned anything from Orb, it's to never apologize for speaking the truth.
That is the major takeaway so far. We're getting multiple people saying, what was that notification? And with a lot of question marks. I hope you guys
go ahead and burn us at the stake. We will be here speaking our truth.
Yeah.
And spreading it like an epidemic of knowledge.
Has someone made yet like an alternate version of the song Stacy's Mom, but made it Momo's Grandma?
Momo's Gmom.
G-Mom.
G-Mom.
G-Mama.
They should. They absolutely
should. They absolutely should.
Although the comment section was having a very weird in-depth conversation about Momo's panties. I feel like...
I noticed that.
It was odd. My wife was looking over my shoulder. I was on my phone and it was just like zooming in on Momo's crotch. I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with her panties.
For people who need context about Momo's panties, I feel like we've gotten more and more lewd over the last coming weeks. I don't know if it's like the moon or something, but...
Mars is in retrograde.
That's another Orb reference, that poor guy. So, hey, newbies, this is the ANN After Show. We stream live here at 6:15 Pacific, 9:15 Eastern every Tuesday, where we talk about anime and anime news. This is the official podcast of Anime News Network. If you missed the intros, I'm Lindsay Loveridge and this is James Beckett. So yeah, we're going to be talking about Dandadan. We're going to be talking about Orb on the movements of the earth. And then there were like six new anime announcements made earlier this week or over the weekend.
It never stops.
It never stops. So we're going to be talking about all of those, giving you a quick intro to those series. So that's what we have in the news today. Quick segue as far as what James is referring to with Momo's panties. So weird, I noticed this, of course, said nothing out loud to anyone about it. You know, Momo gets abducted by aliens. She has a very harrowing experience. It's looking kind of dicey for her. Her psychic powers awakens. She gets out, but because it was an alien abduction where they were going to implant in her or something, we see her in her undergarments. And everyone had a lot of comments because her underwear kind of looks like a bikini cut, for those of you familiar with women's underwear, like white bikini cut. But they also kind of vaguely look like they're paper.
Maybe that has something to do with like the shrine.
Maybe they're protective. Maybe it's a shrine thing. I saw some people throwing around that maybe they're more like, you know, you wear certain things when you go into surgery. And maybe those were put on her by the aliens because they tore up her other clothes. There was an ongoing discussion in the comment section about how unattractive her underwear were, which I was like, weird thing to fixate on. Okay. Yes. So Mr. A says it's very Devilman and hentai or so I'm told. Can't comment on whether that's accurate or not, to be honest with you.
I don't.
And maybe if I did, I still maybe wouldn't tell you. So let's get into the news. Like I said, we're going to speed run these. The event that happened over the weekend was the fifth Overlap Bunko All-Star Roundup Special. For context, Overlap Bunko is a publisher. The publisher is named Overlap and Bunko is a term for it.
All I could think of was the dice game my parents played with our neighbors every Wednesday night when I was a kid.
Oh, Bunko. That is very different.
Yes.
That is very different. So during that event, a couple different anime series were announced. As you can guess by the title, these are mostly like light novel adaptations. But James, none of these are isekai.
No, I noticed that and I was happy to see it. Actually, one second.
One of them involves possession by a ghost.
Right, but that one isn't, that's not an isekai, you're right.
Yeah.
That's right. I couldn't remember if the ghost possession one was a girl who got sucked into a video game, but
I think she was just there and then the villainous ghost possesses her and that's how they decided to roll with it. So the series that we're talking about with the villainous ghost possession, this is called The Holy Grail of Eris, Eris, E-R-I-S, like the goddess of strife from Greek mythology. We have articles for all of these on Anime News Network. You can read the novels and I think the manga version from Yen Press. But Connie is, she's a noble woman with no like outstanding qualities, except she's, they say sincerity. So I guess she just, you know, doesn't lie.
She's she's aggressively honest.
She's aggressively honest. She's kind like, of an asshole.
The hell is up with that shirt, man? It really doesn't work.
Like, don't mind that. It's just Connie. She always you know, will tell you, give it to you straight. So she gets, she loses her fiance, classic villainous plotline, and then is framed for a crime in a night. And then just as all hope seems lost, she's like 0 for 2 and then 0 for 3 because the ghost of an infamous villainess who was executed years ago possesses her and clears her name. So now with her, the villainess's incomparable charisma and intelligence, the spirit of Scarlet Castile turns the tables in the blink of an eye. In return, Connie insists that she help uncover the truth surrounding her new benefactor's untimely death and a conspiracy that continues to this very day. I'll be honest, if this is legit, like animated well, I think I might watch this.
Yeah, that sounds fun. A little murder mystery, supernatural shenanigans. I dig the ghost lady's like rose thorn dress thing. That was cool. No, it looks fun.
The other one, this one does have a teaser. So I think I'll just pull that up for everybody. We were pretty sold on this one. This is a Yuri title, where one of the women just might want to literally eat, probably and figuratively, but literally eat the other one. So this is called This Monster Wants to Eat Me.
Mermaider.
Mermaider.
Mermaider. Like mermaid murder. Oh, my death clock hovers.
She's very sad.
Yes. I'm assuming maybe she like
lost her family.
Yeah. Like maybe she tries to take a jump really, into really the deep swim. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then
kind of the vibes that I'm getting.
I'm really enjoying the music.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like if you're familiar with the Icelandic, the band Sigur Rós.
I'm not. Like that.
He has a very falsetto voice.
Sorry to everyone that I didn't full screen until now. Oh, she's covered in blood.
Mm-hmm. The title card has some Higurashi vibes. So I'm hoping that it actually goes into the horror mode. Like, obviously, the monster girl wants to eat her, but I think it would be really cool if it played a little more into the horror than just a general theme, but actually a little bit of danger, a little bit of spiciness.
Yeah, like, it's not just, you know, lady has scales and she seems a little spooky or something. Like, maybe she didn't, actually dangerous. So, for those who want to, like, a little more, so the mermaid, her name is Shiori, and she emerges from the sea and takes high school girl Hinako by the hand. Hinako lives alone in a town by the sea and possesses an unusually delicious body that is irresistible to nearby monsters. Monsters is plural, so maybe we're going to see like more monsters than just...
Oh, is she going to have a harem? Is it going to be a monster harem?
Maybe, or it's one of those things where like mermaid has to protect her from Kappa and all those other sorts of things, right? To ensure that she matures to the best condition, Shiori seeks to protect Hinako, also that someday she can devour every piece of her. What will become of Hinako's feelings as this looming unjust death closes in on her? Sounds perfect. Sign me up.
I know Marilyn Manson sucks and we don't like him.
Right.
But that song, If I Was Your Vampire.
I used to listen to that all the time.
Because it owns a lot. And that's just the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah. Why do you have to fuck up, man? All right. This next one is sort of related to the other one, only this one's called Past the Monster Meat. No teaser for that. As far as we can tell, this is sort of like a crossover between sexy lady and also eating food porn level looking food. So if you guys liked our dungeon meshy segments where we talked about whether we would eat that or not, this looks like it is mostly that. The main character's name is, I'm going to call her Melf because her full name is Melfiera, which is, doesn't flow very well. Yeah. It's kind of hard to say. So we're going to call, she's an Earl's daughter who's shunned by most of the nobility thanks to rumors about her proclivity for monster-based cuisine. When she attends a party in hopes of finding someone to wed, she's attacked by a vicious monster, only to be saved by Aristide of Galbraith, feared as the blood-mad duke. He begins taking a liking to her, and before long, he's interested in the hobby she never dared to tell anyone else. So she was really eating monsters this whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I gotta say, the title, Masterclass in Innuendo. Thank you, localizers, for doing us a solid and not making it something like, you know, Itadakimasu Monster, my lady, or something.
Exactly.
Pass the monster meat. Hell yeah. Doesn't look like the food's going to be gross like Dungeon Meshi, though. It looks like it'll probably just be like
basilisk food, steak or something like that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in fairness, like Dungeon Meshi's food was usually at least somewhat grounded in some kind of real food.
Yes, it was just
like, how far can you take that?
Which is what made it cool and interesting. I reviewed that one cooking anime that I can't remember the name of, the campfire cooking. Campfire. Right. And that one was fun, but all the meals were really just Japanese food, but different meat. I stole a couple recipes from it. So a lot easier to cook, but not as exotic.
Yeah. This next one, it comes from writer Kumo Kagyu from Goblin Slayer and the artist Sobin, and it's called Blade and Bastard.
Very 90s.
This one's also published in English from J Novel Club. So there's a character in this whose name is literally Garbage, which is just hard to get over on its own. But the main character also has a difficult to pronounce name. It's Iarumus. And so he's resurrected, but he has lost all of his memories. And so he goes dungeon diving to retrieve corpses and then get finder's fee if they can be revived. Or he gets paid whether they can be revived or not. The party members that escape hire him to bring back the corpses of the party members that got left behind.
Oh, sure.
And they pay the finder's fee for him to bring the body back, and then they can try and revive him. And of course, he's shunned by everyone, and they keep their distance because he spends time with corpses. But then he meets Garbage, a feral young swordswoman. So this is a girl named Garbage, who's the sole survivor of a massacre party. And with Garbage by his side, Irumus ventures deeper, scouring the dungeon for clues to his past, avoiding monsters, traps, and the inevitability of a permanent ashen demise.
Sounds like the anime that my 14-year-old self would have died for.
You had like the coolest notebooks at 14, James.
No, not really. There was mostly stick figure comics and like Dragon Ball Z fan fictions.
Yeah.
not even fan fictions, more just like fight scenes that I couldn't draw them. So I'd write them out and show them to my friends. And they'd say, that would be cool if we could see it. And I would say, thanks, guys. I really appreciate that.
use your brain television to see it. Your imagination.
Yeah. It's called imagery, you plebs. is what I might have said at one point.
Yeah. So, I mean, this one probably not gonna watch. Maybe is for
I will watch
else.
At least one episode.
You'd be contractually obligated to watch at least one episode.
I'll be obligated to watch at least one episode. But I'm interested to see if feral swordswoman named Garbage is fun.
From here, she just looks like typical, like, small cavewoman-like girl, red hair, and sword that is bigger than she is.
Yep.
I'm also curious if when it comes out in anime form, if they subtitle her name as Garbage or if they like keep it in Japanese.
It better be Garbage. That's a good name for a feral little murder creature. Like, yeah Garbage. Oh my God. Kurt Cobain's wife.
Courtney Love.
Was she the lead singer of Garbage or was she the lead singer of Hole?
Hole.
Okay.
Lead singer, yeah.
Garbage is a band.
Garbage is a band. It does have a female lead singer.
I always confuse them.
Also, this franchise is related to Wizardry.
Wizardry. Because it's
like the game made in part by Robert Woodhead, original founder of Anime Yego.
Okay. All right.
In the 80s.
I was going to say, that's an old game.
Yeah. It's just got...
Does she have the cool pointy ears?
Are we talking about garbage?
Yeah. Or is that her? Is that like her? Oh, that's her. Her gloves. She has like the little. Okay.
Yeah, they're like I think just fold over flaps that are stylized.
I always like it, and part of this is me still mooning over Metaphor Be Fantasio, but I always love it when anime elves have like sideways pointy ears.
Like Deedlit, good design. This next one is called The Too Perfect Saint, Tossed Aside by My Fiance and Sold to Another Kingdom. Why are fiancés awful in all these fantasy anime, guys?
I mean, they're all arranged marriages, right? So like, you know, you can't pick them.
Yeah, I guess so. We do have like 30-second teaser for this one, so I'll show that real quick.
聖女とは、慈愛に満ち、人々に愛される存在。
Got the violet hair.
Yeah.
なのに彼女は、
she's immediately got Kudere vibes.
Yeah.
They look vaguely like Yuki from Haruhi Suzumiya. Then. Yeah.
That's a good poem. Isn't it crazy that Haruhi is considered old head anime now?
Yeah.
I remember when that was like the cutting edge of like modern anime. That was like, this is what all the new shows are going to be like.
And yeah, this one's with it. Its narrative approach was considered kind of revolutionary at the time. And now it's still fairly uncommon, but we have gotten more anime where it's like, we're going to give you the episodes, but they're out of order and you got to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. No one's had the courage to do another Endless Eight though. Didn't they do like a sequel to Haruhi Suzumiya like not that long ago and no one really talked?
Yes. I mean, there are the films and then there was some additional Endless Eight stuff. I don't think it was like a true.
It was like like a spinoff.
We'll have to look it up. Yeah. So this Saint One, main character name, you can read it in English from Seven Seas. Philia. Yes, that has a lot of potential to, you can tack some things in front of that name and then they mean other things. Yes.
For once, I was just thinking she's going to get sent to a nunnery because of Ophelia.
Oh, I thought you meant like filial, which is like to be pious. So, I mean... Anyway, here we go. Philia's family name has produced saints for generations. It's no surprise that she's shown as the greatest saint of all time and set to marry the second prince, Julius. So saints are allowed to marry and presumably fuck in this, which is usually not how that works.
And but be alive. So that's good.
Yeah, usually you only get that posthumously. But then Julius calls off the engagement, claiming that her perfection makes her charmless and unlikable. So this fiance, instead of being like, I'm going to lie and accuse you of cheating, or I'm going to frame you for a murder. He's just like, you're too good and it's boring.
I mean, all right, I guess, like, whatever.
Then they use her as basically like to a neighboring country in exchange for gold and resources, forcing her to leave her homeland. Okay. So I don't understand how that works, because what did the other country get out of that?
A saint.
I guess so. Okay. Despite bracing herself for mistreatment, everyone is nice to her. And then she puts her saintly abilities to good use, erecting barriers against monsters and curing epidemics. But even as she flourishes in her new life, her homeland is under threat of destruction. Oh no. So now she must make a decision about whether to turn the other cheek and go back to where she was rejected from now that they're in trouble.
Yeah, she probably will.
She probably will.
Yeah.
It's animated by Troika, so I bet it'll be pretty.
Yeah.
But that doesn't have a hook for me.
Look, when the description of your show says our character is literally too boring for other people to love, that's not a good sell, you know?
Yeah. Like,
this character has no flaws. She's nice to everyone. She doesn't really have any conflict outside of what the cruel and horrible world that forces upon her, but she'll make the right choice in the end every time.
She's also got super magic powers. Yep. She's good for the people.
Yeah. Wish her nothing but the best.
But not really interested in following her life at this point. So the last teaser I have here, this is I'm the evil lord of an intergalactic empire. Kudos for deciding to take the demon lord thing, but put it in space, which we haven't seen. I mean, there have been a couple other series. Yeah, it's isekai, but science fiction instead. I don't think enough people have played in that.
Most of the beloved JRPGs of all time are sci-fi RPGs. You'd think we'd get more like Chrono Trigger ripoffs.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy X ripoffs.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy VII ripoffs. Final Fantasy VIII ripoffs, etc.
Everyone keeps wanting to play in the vaguely Dungeons and Dragons sort of more like Dragon Quest space.
But less charming by leaps.
Yeah. We could get more out of if you wanted to make this sci-fi. I'm probably going to regret this later when we get a bunch of variations. I was reborn as an alien king and all whatever. The tentacle I'll ladies take want me. At this
point. I'll take anything different.
Someone write down the time code for this so that we can directly clip this when we hate this.
Okay, like 10 years from now, when we've watched 300 of them that are all completely interchangeable, we will be sad. But for that first like year or two, it'll be like, hey, look at this. Homeboy's got a lightsaber. He's got a spaceship. You know, he's like, so a great.
We've redone Tenchi. Thank sure. you.
Please give me Tenchi. Like a Tenchi ripoff again, but not like a bad one. Give me a good Tenchi ripoff. Let's watching see. Rama Half made me realize Rama One Half. Is that the English? Is it Rama One Half?
I've always said Rama One Half.
Okay. I've said it like every different way. Watching Rama One Half made me realize I miss it when like goofy rom-com sex romps were actually funny. I can put up with so much dumb shit if it's funny, but when it's not funny, it's miserable.
Yeah. You just need a Kuno.
Yeah.
Kuno makes everything better. Soon a Roga who will also make everything better.
Yeah.
So let's see if I'm the evil lord of an intergalactic empire is good.
Oh, to be honest, I thought I cut you off and there was going to be like a second clause on there because it usually is.
No.
Okay. Hey, spaceships.
Yeah.
Big crunchy chairs.
Oh, you know what else did Tenchi in space? Vandred. Remember Vandred?
No. Oh. I'm sure I would if I saw like the key artist.
Yeah, there were two seasons of that.
Hell yeah. Okay. Look, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Be the demon lord, but with Max. All right. Yeah. Hell yeah.
It kind of looks like Lelouch a bit.
He does look like Lelouch. He very much does. That's probably on purpose. I guess he was the OG demon lord in a certain
sense. He looks a little bit like Lelouch. He also looks a little bit like the main character from Eminence and Shadow.
Yeah. You know?
He does talk about his past life, so maybe this is an isekai.
Yeah, but you know what? Again, I will take it. I've been playing Star Ocean for the first time.
Yeah.
And you know what? That game rules.
So, does it?
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, it's like...
We've got a brief stinger.
Oh.
Is that Mamoru Miyano?
Oh man, is that the god of the fantasy world? Is he like a little? Is he a hoe?
I thought he looked like a shady detective noir villain or something. Oh, he had a hat and a trench coat with holes in it and stuff. Yeah,
he's either that or he's like a Michael Jackson stan.
Quanti 5 says Ranma divided by two.
Yeah,
that's what it's called on this show. From
now I'm sorry, if we're going by Kingdom Hearts rules, it'd be Ranma 1/2.
1/2.
1/2. Ranma 1/2.
What do they have? Isn't it Kingdom Hearts and like 3/8 or
it's
something?
It's like 365 days over two something, 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 something.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, that's I'm the evil lord of an intergalactic empire. That looked fun.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Again, yeah. I will take anything. I don't think the anime industry realizes how desperate I am. I'd be throwing out 3 stars left and right over Preview Guide if you gave me like an isekai that was set on a boat.
We haven't had one where they're like, yeah, no. I got isekai now, a pirate.
Give me Isekai Waterworld with Kevin freaking Costner. Give me Isekai Jurassic Park. Give me Isekai Dante's Peak, where they're just running away from a volcano. Really, I guess I'm saying give me like all of the 90s blockbusters.
Isekai, but there's dinosaurs.
Give me Isekai Speed, where they're on a bus and it has to stay 50 miles an hour, but it's filled with ogres and shit.
Keanu Reeves is still there, but he's just a passenger because it looks like this isekai guy's got it.
And, yeah, you know, but he's the whole time he's like, not again.
Anime 80 says, I drowned at the theme park and now I must travel the high seas in another world. Do it!
Remember Amagi Brilliant Park? reverse Isekai Disneyland. Brilliant.
I never watched that one, so I didn't know it was reverse Isekai Disneyland. I just thought it was about theme park workers, but they were sad. All right. So let's get to the point of this podcast, which is MILFs are out, GILFs are in, and we are specifically talking about Momo's grandma, who is MVP of this episode's great introduction, by the way. She appears on one of those shows that has a psychic trying to guess things, and they have this boy idol. Well, I guess I shouldn't call him a boy. Like, he's a young man. He's 20.
He's a man.
He's a man. And she's just like, you're lying about your age. You have a child and you're lying about your favorite food. And everyone's like, this psychic sucks. That's not true. And then we see later in the episode, he has a press conference where he's like, yeah, so I have a kid and I'm actually like 25 instead of 20 or something like that. Introducing the best grandma ever.
Reminds me of that the mom from Jellyfish Can't Swim at Night, who she's actually like the mother of like 12-year-old, and she's been an idol for a decade and a half. She fully admits to being in her late 30s, and it's like, hell yes.
Yeah. Good represent. You. Thank you. Good yeah. You. So what's your overall opinion on this new addition to the Don Don cast?
Amazing. No notes. Perfection. I will say this. If I'm using my critic brain, mm-hmm. I do think it's kind of a cop-out to make her like a hot 20-year-old with gray hair. Maybe this is just because I'm in my 30s and I can actually appreciate the beauty of an older woman. But we've had a lot of buff hot granddads in anime. She could have some laugh lines.
That's the thing that I was thinking would really like kind of sell it a little more. Just give her a little bit of laugh lines, you know, a little bit up here as well, just to like. But I mean, she doesn't have it in the manga either.
I know. Yeah. That's a Don Don thing. That's not the anime. And I get that there's lore reasons for it. Maybe she had Momo's mom real young.
Okarun does say, like, your grandma's really young. So I don't know if there's a lore reason or if we are supposed to assume that she's, like, maybe early 40s or something like that. Like, it happens. So.
It does. And I mean, I have met women older than me who look younger than me.
So yeah.
It's not, like, impossible. But I'm just saying. I mean, she's still great. Look at her. She smokes.
Yeah.
She laughs and claps at the stupid sitcom jokes.
Yeah. It's like me. Yeah.
Her baseball bat's also a pencil, which is just practical and cool.
Do you think she writes her checks with it as well as magic circles?
I would hope so. And like a really threatening way. Like she like sticks her leg up on the table and she's just like, you know, trying really hard to write the kanji for her name. She's just glaring at the cashier the entire time. For having the audacity.
Mr. A wants you to know that if you search for the show with safety stuff turned on, there are artists who are churning out what you want. Do you mean turned off?
Probably means off.
Probably means with safety turned off, right?
We've been in this industry long enough. I didn't even need to search it. I know what it looks like. I can imagine it. If I close my eyes, I see it.
Again, using the power of imagination, anything. Really, right? Now, she's not the only grandma in this episode because we also have Turbo Grandma.
It's true. Oh, wait. I think Mr. A, he was saying, if I leave it on, I will avoid the real GILF paradise that the internet has waiting. And
that's
I can
true.
Just see the tasteful.
Sure.
The tasteful art.
Yes.
So thank you for the recommendation.
Honestly, there's no non-sexual version of this.
No, look at image. Her. Like that's not. Yeah, the show's Momo already doing it for us.
My favorite part of the screenshot, though, is the smiley face on Momo's t-shirt.
Yeah,
which is just minimalist, and compared to her actual expression, very funny. So,
can I say that something I have noticed is that consistently. And I don't know how much of this is just them translating the manga or if they're taking advantage of the, you know, the medium. But Momo's like background reaction faces are consistently deeply funny.
Are
like,
they
she's
really?
She's just always pissed off and confused and tired. And I relate to that on a personal level. And the show does a good job of communicating it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to rewatch the episodes and just follow her. Although I feel like once we finally get Gigi in here.
Yeah,
the background face game, because I was just reading one of the latest chapters in the manga. That dude is such a little weirdo. I appreciate that the manga gives him stuff to do mm-hmm. in the background. Momo and Okarun will be having a conversation. And in the background, Gigi's singing some like early 90s or late 80s city pop song that I don't know. He'll continue singing it from frame to frame. And then it's Ira's just sort of looking annoyed at him while he continues to make monkey faces in the background and do that. So once we get the whole crew together, the show's going to be so exciting. I'm really excited for episode 4, but actually what happens after that, because then we start meeting the extended cast. Momo and Okarun are great, but that group dynamic is really
the things that the manga does best. Its character work is just next level. It's a great cast.
Yeah.
Do we know, is this 12 or 24?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of what arc it would end on if it was 12. I'm hoping that we get through Gigi's arc, his first arc. Do you think we'll get through that? That's kind of where
I think we kind of have to, right? Like, we're not going to cut off in the middle. I can't really think of a place where we would
cut. Because Ira's got like a mini arc as well.
Yeah, but that one's really short. Yeah. That's like maybe 2 episodes.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then Gigi's stuff, that happens before like the composers in the music room, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we probably won't get giant-headed Beethoven this season.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Not if it's 12.
Sorry, guys. This is one of the first shows I think we've watched. Like, James and I have both read the manga and are up to date with it. So you're going to get some level of that. But yeah, as far as this episode, other than the introduction of Momo's grandma, we're dealing with Turbo Granny, who has, as Momo puts it, stolen Okarun's peen.
Yes, and I think that's specifically a dub line. I think in the subs, she might just say like thingy, but I couldn't. I couldn't resist.
Peeing. Yeah,
that's too perfect of a localization.
It is a very good localization. The second half of the episode is sort of around Okarun needing to pee.
No, needing to take a dump.
Needing to take a dump, but has to be observed because there's still no way to keep Turbo Granny from taking over.
Yes.
This image is great. Like, so the yellow ones up at the top are her usual eyes. The rest is like psycho demonic yokai stuff. Multiple mouths all over the place. More eyes inside of feet, ears on the end of one of the feet and stuff. Just horrors.
Real substance vibes. There's just a lot of eyes and mouths where they shouldn't be in that movie.
Yeah. Otherwise, I would say most of it is this, right?
His little poo-poo dance?
Okarun doing his little poo-poo dance.
An expertly animated poo-poo dance, I may add.
They carry on like a whole conversation in front of him, and he does that in the background the entire time. Like, they don't ever give him a break. Also, I just want to like shout out to all the viewers that we have that are new from over on, I assume, Twitter right now. I've never seen us have 10,000 and a half concurrent viewers.
Hi, everybody.
Are you guys all hoping to see titties? Is it because of what I titled this that all of you are here?
It's absolutely the title. Yes, it's 100%.
Okay, well, I regret to inform you there's no titties.
Well, I mean, we had, you know, Grandma was...
Grandma was getting some cleavage going on. This is another pretty good shot of her, right? Yeah. I don't think they tell us in this episode, but I'm pretty sure the thing around her middle is an abdomen warmer, which is very much associated with older people in Japan because their tummies get cold. So like she's wearing it, but because of how she looks, it almost comes off like a sweater corset or something as opposed to being something associated with older people. Also,
this is like, one of my favorite shots of the episode, by the way. Just
in despair,
desperate sadness.
In despair back there. Shout out to Momo's cozy loungewear too that has a hood with bear ears on it. It looks fluffy and pink. Her and her grandma wear this.
Game is on point.
Oh, I bet she's got hella shoes. Like,
oh yeah,
this girl's a sneakerhead.
Well, did you catch the post credits little tag that they had?
Let me zoom to it. Oh yes,
good lines. Yeah.
This one, fashion is the best armor for a gyaru. I tend to forget that she's technically a gyaru because it's so heavily associated with being blonde in anime. You rarely get a gyaru who's not blonde, but Momo is a gyaru. She talks like a gyaru. She dresses cool and hip like a gyaru. She doesn't do the more exaggerated makeup, but
I'm assuming she dyes her hair. I don't think I've ever seen that bright shade of brown.
If all the hair colors in the show were supposed to be realistic, I would say yes, she definitely adds like copper tone or whatever to her hair. But like Ira's hair is pink though, and I feel like she doesn't dye it because she's more of a goody-goody, right? As far as like, well, I mean, not truly, but she keeps up appearances to be that way at school initially. Yeah. So I would think her hair's not dyed yet.
Probably wouldn't get away with that under the dress code.
Probably not. Also, I thought they were kind of killing it in the traditional garb until they got rid of it later.
Yeah. I love that Okarin's mask just looks depressed still.
like he's got his eyebrows.
Yeah.
And I like Momo's flower crown. It looks really cute at first. Like, oh, he's going to give her a ride on his bike the whole way there. And then they just get on the subway. Because no, we're not biking this whole way. We'll be tired and we have to race a literal yokai grandma named Turbo Granny. So... anyway, it was a very cute episode. Next one, we'll again return the action that we got in the previous two and have some fun developments too.
Get that peen back.
Gotta get that peen. And it'll be the first episode that I hadn't seen already. Up until this point, we had a lot of screeners, or if you went and saw it in theaters, this is the end point for folks who were able to go see that. So finally get like new material on Thursday.
I think the last thing I'll say is that the show continues to do its romance or relationship stuff really, really well. They're just freaking adorable together. Like when she's biting his head, running to the toilet. Like it's just,
yeah.
It's, I think you talked about this last week, how they have a dynamic that you just don't see a lot, where you'll get like the tsundere and like the whatever character, or you'll get like the
guy who's basically a dish towel.
Yes. But like, it just feels so much more like real kids figuring out their feelings, and Okarun's trying to figure out how comfortable he can be. It's just really cute.
Also, someone was coming for Okarun in the comments a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you saw that.
Like, oh, I did. Very aggressive.
Yeah. And Okarun's cool, guys.
Yeah, he's like, a good guy. What do you want from him? He's never had a friend. He's doing good for someone that has never once had a friend.
Yeah. And I mean, also, yes, because this is like shared protagonist story, and we've only had two baddies to come, you know, and the first one, Okarun definitely doesn't have any sense of his powers at that point, right? Like he's just encountered Turbo Granny. And then the second one, like he's just starting to figure it out. So you got to give him time to get into his hero role so that he can be a badass. But I promise you, he's a badass. It's just
Can I just say, I feel like this is a trend I've seen a lot. I remember hearing it back when I watched Steven Universe.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the understandable and in many ways good discourse that we've been having about relationships, mental health, etc., has worked its way into how people analyze fiction, which again can be good, but this is a goofy action comedy about a guy whose balls got stolen by a ghost grandma. Because a lot of the comments are like, Okarun needs to earn the right to be loved once he works on himself. It's like, guys, that's not what this is. His peen got stolen. We don't need to give him a personality test and have him work on the 8 steps of human communication or whatever. It's a cute little rom-com about a grumpy girl and a goofy guy and the monsters they fight. And like, that's it.
I feel like that's also coming from a weird place because like Okarun, I wouldn't consider his starting point like a flawed protagonist or one where like he's obviously like shouldering a ton of trauma and lashing out at people and all these other sorts of things, and he needs to like go inward and figure that out.
No, he's gotten into a couple of arguments with Momo and like called her ugly as a joke to show that he was grumpy at her.
In the same way, when she found out he wasn't mortally injured and was inside that shrine house, she opens the door and sees him. He hasn't done anything, and then she gets pissy at him because he was so worried, and then instead of being relieved, she feels dumb for being that worried and then channels that at him. So it's like,
I've seen people like call out like, but she won't even let him use his own name. That's like really messed up and manipulative. Like,
I haven't seen that one.
The joke is that when she hears the name Ken Takakura, she gets all messed up and woo-woo feeling, and she can't handle that. What I think the best joke of this episode is when her grandma yells Okarun's real name and she like instantly collapses into a mushy cartoon mode because it's a goofy cartoon.
Yeah. And I mean, I think he ends up liking the name for its own reason, because it's like a it's a sign. And it was given to him by a friend,
a cute girl. If y'all haven't had a significant other and or good friend give you a personal nickname,
yeah,
it's the best.
It is.
It's the best.
So everyone needs to cut the poor boy some slack. He's doing his best. I mean, he's been.
Is that Shinji? You know,
no, like, he's very much. He's not Shinji. No, no, he's nowhere close to Shinji. All right, James, we talked a little bit off camera about the fact that we may have differing opinions on episode 4 of Orb on the movements of the Earth. It does happen on occasion.
Are we gonna fight?
I mean, we kind of fought about Boy and the Heron, didn't we?
We did, yeah. We had a very productive and interesting conversation about our differing perspectives.
Right.
One of which was deeply wrong and incorrect. But that's...
Yeah, like when you said Howl's Moving Castle was their worst film.
I don't know, that's not his worst film. I might have said it's his worst action. The worst Miyazaki movie is still a masterpiece.
Sure, Come on.
It's not like he's... No, I promised I would stop openly making fun of Goro Miyazaki every week. It's not like he's another far less talented animator that has yet to produce a genuinely good film.
Yeah.
It's Miyazaki.
Yeah. And I have that soundtrack on vinyl. I think it is one of Joe Hisaishi's best scores.
Oh, I won't argue that.
Okay.
I don't think that guy has ever turned out a less than incredible score. I cannot think of a Miyazaki film that doesn't have a great score.
So with that behind us, let's talk about Orb episode 4. I'm actually very interested to hear why it didn't work for you personally. All eyes on you.
All eyes on me. So for me, I was trying to come up with ways to like explain this because I knew I was going to have to explain myself. And as I word this, I think we've been talking about the ways that the show reminds us of Vinland Saga. It's a very human drama about big ideas, and it's using its historical backdrop to explore these philosophical perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. Where Vinland Saga is very much about pacifism versus vengeance and humanity's desire for power and agency. And this is a show that's very much about the pursuit of truth, the power of knowledge, the ways that institutions will weaponize ignorance or weaponize conformity and use that to sustain their own interests, even if it is going against progress. I think all that's really interesting. But there were moments in this episode where Orb became like 10 to 15% less subtle than Vinland Saga. It didn't tip it over to the edge. I think it's a good episode. It was very well made. I'm really interested to see, what's his name?
It's spelled O-C-Z-Y and it's Polish.
I think the C is like a ch, but I could be wrong.
I'll be asking someone later this week to tell me.
Yeah. Sound up in the chat. If any of you know how to correctly pronounce the name of the new protag of this arc of Orb.
Yeah.
I'm going to call him Achi.
Okay.
I like that he is very much like almost the diametric opposite of Raffle.
Yeah.
Where he's a regular guy. He works for basically the cops, but he's the civilian watch.
Yeah.
He's a physical guy. He kills people for a living.
I think nobles hire them to do duels on their behalf.
Yes. So,
yeah.
And also like, and they get hired to guard the heretic and his transport. So they're kind of like blades for hire, right?
Yeah.
And so he's very much like a blue collar worker, for lack of a better term. He's not educated. He's not a noble of any kind. He's not working in the same realm as Raffle and other scientists, but he still is very much concerned with the world that he's in. And I really liked the opening of the episode where he's kind of trying to reckon with the fact that life sucks a lot.
Yes.
And everything is bad. Life is just nothing but blood and death and suffering. But there's this whole promise of heaven, and he's really latched on to that religious framework is the only thing that keeps him going, even though he's afraid for his very soul because he's a murderer and not a very good guy. The idea that there could be a reprieve from this existence, I think that's really interesting because that wrestles with a lot of the kind of philosophical, spiritual questions that I think are interesting when I read this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not a religious guy, but I like reading the religious philosophies, especially of like the Renaissance era, just because that's when people really were asking a lot of questions that don't have easy answers.
Mm-hmm.
Where the episode lost me a little bit was with the heretic guy at the end that they are investigating. Well, it lost me in a couple of places. Heretic guy. I did find, what's his name? Stargazer friend.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. There is the not very sophisticated 12-year-old boy that lives in my brain that was struggling a little bit to get through the very long scenes of him describing his meticulous measurements of,
oh, really? The,
of okay. the stars and Mars. I thought it was interesting, but I don't really know these guys very well yet, so I'm not like super invested in how this guy feels about the movement of the stars. I'm sure I will be, but for now. When the heretic guy came in, like his whole, you know, there is no God and there is no heaven and it's all a lie that you sheeple have been blinded by. The presentation of that felt like I was reading an r/atheism post. And I get that that's partially the point. We have to talk in big, general, grand gestures. I like where it ends up because I genuinely love the idea that the direction they're going is if you allow yourself to move away from this religious dogma that demands that you just accept the shitty world for the way that it is and accept your place in it because you're just going to go to heaven and that's your reward, you can actually recognize that this plane of existence has a lot of beautiful, wonderful things.
Yeah.
That I really like.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I love how we got there as far as this literal creepy cloaked figure that's cackling about his incredibly big brain smart understanding of how there is no God and there is no heaven and you don't go anywhere when you die, you idiots, you stupid idiots. I get it. Am I making sense?
Yes, absolutely. So the heretic in the episode is totally overblown. For sure. Like, we've never seen him before. This is not one of the heretics from earlier in the series or anything like that. At least we don't think so. Like, that's
well,
not...
it's been what, how long? Like a decade? Like,
it's been 10 years. Part of me is like, what if that was Raffles' adopted dad? But at this point, he just looks like a hairless face.
Yes.
You know, he looks like he may be blind or at least his eyes are glazed over.
Like a Dark Souls
NPC. Yeah. It looks like cataracts or something over his eyes. And he's just. You know, I think he's just fucking with them because they're escorting him to his death. So maybe he's just feeling like pissy, like, well, I'm just gonna, you know, sow some chaos and questions in these guys. And he also mentions, if you want proof, I've got a box up on a hill that's got all of it in it. And it's, I think we can safely assume that it's Ruffles. Box.
That's the scene that we saw at the end of the last episode, right?
Mm-hmm. They're hiking up the mountain. So you're going to come out of this transportation thing. I think Oxy and Gross are going to talk it over. I have a feeling Gross is probably going to push the issue and they're both going to end up retrieving that box. What did work for me in this episode was both the main two characters, like perspective characters, Oxy and Gross. I thought Gross's bit about watching Mars enthusiastically, it wasn't super interesting, but I liked it because he was using it as an explanation for his ability to find hope in their situation. And so with that context, I actually really liked listening to his explanation about, all this looks like it sucks, but I've been measuring the movements of Mars for 2 years. And what it proves is there's the stars are beautiful and there's a system to it. And it's off of Raphael's perspective from the past arc, because his whole argument for why heliocentrism was supposed to be real is because it was more beautifully simplistic than the convoluted orbital rotations that were being at the time. Because it was
the more you discover about the universe, the less geocentrism can make sense.
Right.
And so... yeah, it, like the idea that like if we just twist our perspective a little bit and allow ourselves to accept a version of reality that's different from what we've been told, it's actually so much easier to explain the world that we live in.
And he's going about it in a much smarter way than Raphael was, which is he just keeps it in his little notebook. And that's it, because he's not interacting with higher class people super often, other than when they ask him to kill someone. Otherwise, it's just his little hobby. And it seems
No, Novak?
It's Novak, yeah.
Novak is still around.
He has a beard now.
He's got a big old beard, yeah.
He's got a big old beard now. Listening to him sort of explain that, I liked it as a person who isn't religious, hearing how people find hope and sense of purpose or spirituality in the natural world is very inspiring to me personally. And then you find out his backstory about, you know, he survived a suicide attempt and his family has been killed by the plague. So his sort of obsession with this, it is almost like he's forcing it because like he needs it to work, right? Which is why when he discovers that sometimes Mars moves in retrograde, his entire life gets messed up, right?
It's like
it's not perfect anymore. What's even the point of anything? You know, he kind of has a whole meltdown. And I felt so bad for him as a person who has access to that knowledge. Be like, bro, it's just because the orbit's elliptical. It's not a perfect circle. And sometimes it gets caught in the orbits of other objects. And that causes the appearance of it moving backwards because we've overtaken it. But I can't tell him that because he exists in a cartoon. So, but I also really
like... And if you said any of those words in that order, in that era, they probably would have jailed you as a witch.
Oh, I would have been killed so many times over it.
I'm sorry. Do you know math?
Who
taught you that?
Who taught you that math? Yeah, who taught you that math?
Was it the devil? Did you get it from old Scratch's black book?
I did.
Did he teach you trigonometry?
So beyond that, though, too, like, Oxy is very interesting as a man who is deeply depressed, right? So he doesn't even look up at the stars because, like, he feels intimidated by, like, or he doesn't feel like he has the right to look at, upon heaven, I think is what it was. Like, it's like, I don't look up it because it feels like they're all looking down on me.
The old Catholic guilt. It'll get you every time.
Yep. So he's got that going on. And then when Gross is like, come on, man, just like explain to me what's so wrong. He's like, there's no point in anything. Every time I'm not even sure that really heaven's real. And if I'm going to end up there, I mean, every time I've killed someone, they look so depressed, like they're not seeing the gates of heaven. So maybe most of us don't get to go. And if we don't get to go, then what am I doing? He like completely
spiraling,
unloads. And then he's like, sorry. So they just go get a drink afterwards. So it'll be interesting to see how things move going forward, just because it was easier to see a trajectory with Rafal because he was already academic minded in that particular way. Mm-hmm. These are complete laymen. Yeah. And so it's like, what are they going to do?
Do they even know how to read? Well, Grostex, he has his journal.
He writes, so presumably,
right. I'm
kind of curious for that. The opening sequence also promises a monk with an eye patch who looks pretty cool, so I'd like to see what's up with that guy. There's a dude who just vomits in the opening, and I'm like, am I gonna every episode watch this dude vomit?
Probably.
Do they also switch out some of the parts that had Roth?
Yeah, in the beginning, and put him in. I liked that too. I have 2 points that I want to make sure I make about the conversation we're having here.
Yeah.
Very different points. First, I read a book a couple years ago called The Great Mortality, and it's not 15th century. It's, I guess it would have been 14th century. This is 16th century. It's during the first major outbreak, the bubonic plague. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a travelogue of the disease where it tracks it from its appearance in Eastern Europe and how it spreads west all the way eventually to like the Celtic Isles. It's an incredible book. If you're interested in nonfiction and the time period, I really highly recommend it. But one of my favorite passages, a lot of the book is dealing specifically with what the experience of that plague was like for the people. There's a lot of primary sources, journal entries and things like that. The thing that struck me the most about the common thread that so many people were experiencing is this was a time period where everyone, you know, 99.9% of people that didn't want to get burned at the stake were religious, like devoutly religious. From our perspective, we would probably see the most like middle of the road guy from back then as like a fanatic, right?
Yeah.
And so for them, much like people in this time period, there's no separation between science and religion. It's all one. Their understanding of everything is filtered through things like heaven and hell. And there's a passage of a man whose job it was, he was like county clerk or something. the reason we have all of his records is because he had to keep all these logs of what happened every day. And mm-hmm. he talked about how his children died, his wife died, his relatives died, all within the span of like a few months. They ran out of room in the graveyards and had to dig trenches in the side of the road, just stacked with bodies. He would have to pass them by when he went to work every day. And he wrote in his journal something the effect of like, you know, I'm literally walking by the graves of this entire town every day. I'm seeing their bodies. This is the end of the world.
Yeah.
This is the apocalypse. And to me, that perspective is so fascinating. That's what I really like about these characters. When they are reckoning with trying to untangle that mindset with figuring out the truth of the universe, mm-hmm. it's not just like politically dangerous. They are literally having to reframe their entire understanding of reality. It's like Neo waking up in the Matrix, where it's like, no, you don't understand. Every single thing that you've ever been taught about anything, fundamentally, you can't trust it. Because the powers that be are wrong about this. And if they're wrong about this, what else are they wrong about? So I love that.
Yes. Yeah, it's very good. It's brought up by the Heretic in a pretty snarky way, where he talks about how the understanding of the world is based on an elderly man who was forced to kill himself. They don't name drop him, but they're talking about Socrates. Yes, Socrates was wrong, but can we give him a little more credit than that?
3,000 plus years on that guy?
It was also, like, I'm sure I knew this on some level, but it wasn't until he said that I was like, Socrates was alive before Jesus? Because our brains always put them in a different order because we think of ancient Greece as sort of like this thriving, knowledgeable civilization full of philosophers. And whenever we see imagery of the biblical era, we see poor people in the streets and they don't have a lot of clothing and like they're just overrun by the Romans that. And it's like, oh, well, that one had to have been before this one because everything got better, right? But we're talking about like two different areas of civilization, although there was, you know, some definitely cross-pollination. But also, it kind of reminded me of earlier in episode 2, because Rafal goes out in a way that could be considered similar to Socrates. Mm-hmm. Because Socrates famously was found guilty for corrupting the youth by a tribunal and then was forced to kill himself by drinking nightshade. Mm-hmm. Rafal was given the opportunity to recant. I don't remember if Socrates was given that opportunity and refused or not. But then instead of submitting to the state and being tortured and then burned to death, he OD'd on opium and died peacefully in his cell and then was burned. So anyway.
Very, very intentional. Oh, the other point I wanted to make, very different. Have we talked about how the ending theme of this show is excellent?
It's very good.
It's really good. Every time it comes on, it almost feels like it should be for a different show. It's not melancholy or anything. It's just really catchy and sweet. I really like the ending theme.
Andrew McGee points out in the chat that Socrates was also offered the chance to recant and live. I read his entire, I guess you could call it his deposition in philosophy class in college, but it's been 20 years for me since then. But on the music, I really like the opening song too, which is why I've sat through that dude vomiting so many times already. Yeah, well, I think that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next Tuesday with more Dawn to Dawn, more Orb, and more anime news that you can use. So if you're one of the supposedly 16,000 people who looked at us at some point during this last hour, hey, give us a follow. We're live Tuesday, 6:15 p.m. Pacific, 9:15 p.m. Eastern on Twitter, YouTube, and also on Facebook, the Shambling Corpse of Facebook, Shambling Corpse of Twitter, but we're still
there.
Don't
forget to hit us up in the comments and let us know who are your favorite sexy grandmas across media and time.
Hey, why not? Why not? Drop it in the comments. Hopefully it'll be someone I haven't heard of. I'm trying to think, what are some other sexy grandmas?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, okay. We're thinking live action grandmas. Okay.
I will take anything. I mean, anime grandmas.
Yeah.
Now I am at a loss. I'm sure I will think of some.
I was trying to think of like other cartoon grandmas, but the first one that came
to mind from Looney Tunes.
I was thinking from Courage the Cowardly Dog, but neither of those.
Oh, Muriel. Good.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sure there's Eustace. Obviously, he's there for Muriel. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know what? I'll come back to this. And I'll put in our own comments. Yeah. All right, everybody. Be good to each other, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Bye.
The ANN After Show is an official podcast of Anime News Network. You can hang out with us live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The ANN After Show is hosted by Lindsay Loveridge and James Beckett and is produced by Lindsay Loveridge.